Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with two great guests. First, with Leanne Zelog. She is the president and owner of Simply Put, LLC. She is going to be talking about the difference education and development make with your employees. Also, we're going to be talking with Mike Miles. He is the Director of Human Resources for the City of Portland, Maine. Mike is going to be talking about maintaining non-union status, the challenges, and the process. So our first guest today will be Leanne Zelog, and she is the owner and president of Simply Put, LLC. Hi, welcome.
Thank you for having me, David.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So Simply Put, LLC, where'd you get the name Simply Put?
I am a training consultant and a keynote speaker, and I find that audiences like things put simply. They can understand it. Ways that they can understand things. I promote my business that I provide practical skills for a more purposeful life. Simple, plain and simple. Very easy techniques, knowledge, easy to understand and easy to implement. Simply put.
Well, it actually appears to be the right name then. Absolutely.
Thank you.
You know, I do find common sense is uncommon. Would we not agree
yes,
with that?
Yes, absolutely.
So when you can keep things very simple and direct, it makes it very easy to understand. One of the things that I'll talk about training, because we're going to be talking about, obviously, training and development today, mm-hmm. Is that sometimes when you're dealing with training and you're going into a half-day seminar or you're going into a full-day seminar, people get tired. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking for takeaways that they can come out of a training session or they come out of a leadership development session. How do you address that in your training?
I do a variety of things. Obviously, engagement is key to getting people engaged. Giving them information, giving them inspiration, but also getting them up on their feet, getting them engaged with a various activity or engaged with each other. I find that I want to provide them information, but they also have a lot of expertise, a lot of knowledge that they can share with each other. So I engage them and encourage them to share their experiences, their knowledge with one another. So I break them into groups, have them have a lot of conversation about the various subject matter we're speaking about, and then I have them all report out. So all of us are sharing knowledge and experience together.
So obviously, looking at your site, which is clearly, what is your name, not your company name?
Yes,
it's funny. Usually I go on these sites prior to, and it just happened to be that I looked on here. I went, wait a minute, yeah. It's not. So
when I started my business, I didn't have a name for my business yet. So I was going by, and my name has a lot of recognition, too.
Sure.
So I went with Leanne Zelog for a long time and toyed with various names for my business, and it probably wasn't until 12 to 18 months later that I found the right name. It really was an evolution. I tried a couple of different things in my mind.
Sure.
And then just one day, it was like that light bulb went on after I did a class, and someone said to me, you know, you put things so simply. It's so easy. And it was like, simply put.
The light goes on at that
right,
point.
Right, exactly. So it was meant to be.
So your website is Leanne, L-E-E-A-N-N, Zelog, S-Z-E-L-O-G.com.
Yes.
And one of the things I noticed on here under the training, you call it the art of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about that, because a number of the courses that you're really looking at focus on communication.
Right. I would say I specialize in communication. Now, that is a huge gamut, everything from, you know, individual communication to communicating with leadership and management development, sales, presentation skills. It also incorporates attitude. But communication, in this day and age, we have more ways to communicate, but I find our communication is worse than ever. We have more ways to connect to each other, yet we seem more disconnected than ever before. So my communication, the art of human relations, is really getting people to getting back to the basics of communication and human interaction. Now, that doesn't just mean one-on-one communication, but it also is taking that human interaction and those emotions and trying to get it into all of the electronic communication we do, whether it's on Facebook or LinkedIn or email or phone or texting. We can create that same emotion and engage people electronically as well as in person. So I really focus on getting people to communicate with each other, really drawing upon the emotional element, because we're so driven by technology and information this day and age, we've forgotten the power of the human spirit. And that's what I really focus on, David.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We have all the high tech. You know, all the high-tech gadgetry out there, we're on our smartphones, we're on our, you know, iPads, we're on our, you know, tablets, if you want to call them. It really does change the way people communicate. And I think I see it when certainly we're doing, even in speaking classes, you and I do speaking at times, and you see them, they're all head down, right?
Yes.
They're looking at the phone.
Yes.
I see it in our children.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, right. If they're with their friends, they don't talk much anymore.
No, they don't.
Matter of fact, they can be in the same room and text one another to have a conversation. And it's spilling into the workplace.
Yes.
And this is an interesting dynamic. And so we are kind of losing that high-touch world that really is critical to developing an environment, you know, a culture. You know, how do people have to deal with that? Because it does affect profitability at the end of the day.
It absolutely does. And, you know, this is the HR Power Hour. This is, you know, hopefully a lot of human resources people are listening. Human resources is usually looked at as a cost center, but you can look at it as a profit center if you invest in the development of your employees, because a company's greatest expense is usually the employees, the salaries and benefits. Companies also have great expense when it comes to investments in technology, investments in marketing. But we sometimes, we're a little short-sighted on the investment in our people. We're paying salaries and benefits, but we need to invest in them, in their development, in their education, because they're going to be the ones that actually deliver on whatever that marketing promise is. If a customer has a problem, who are they going to call? They're going to call a human being. If somebody has a problem with technology, they're going to contact a human being. It still is a human being that is behind everything that's happening within a company. So it's important that companies invest in the education and development of their employees so they know how to interact in a professional manner with customers and with clients. That's so very important. And make sure that they're delivering on their vision, their mission, whatever their marketing promise is. And you're right. It's interesting to me because our society has become so accustomed to having our cell phones or our mobile devices.
So true.
And we have almost trained ourselves to think, I'm afraid I'm going to miss something. So it always has to be right there.
Immediate,
right there. Yes.
Immediate answers.
Yeah. I'm afraid I'm going to miss something. Yeah. But I challenge everybody to think about, be afraid of what you're going to miss in person, one-on-one, in the present moment. If you are so distracted by that device and missing something on that device, what are you missing in the present world? You're missing a lot. You're missing that human interaction, that engagement, that emotional connection that we all need and desire as human beings.
There's no question. I think, you know, companies are struggling right now to figure out how to balance the communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking a lot about, you hear in the news recently a lot about flex time.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Yahoo is going the opposite way, you know, pulling back a little bit on flex time and other companies as well. So there is this question mark of what is too much communication.
Mm-hmm.
I know I get emails every day. And it was interesting. I had done a seminar for 3 days and had really not been able to check my email, only on my phone. And when I got to my email, I didn't realize that when I downloaded it on Outlook, it was almost 1,000 emails.
Oh, my gosh. That's
in
crazy.
3 days.
Wow.
Well, it doesn't look that much when you're looking on the phone, right?
Yeah.
But I think about the fact that that's what people get every day in their inbox. Now, a lot of it was junk.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. It's still something that takes time away from you doing your everyday work. Work environment. So, how do you recommend that a company looks at their processes and looks at how they communicate? How do you take about that? Because it's not just about training. It's about follow-up.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The process that's involved. Yep, yep. What's your recommendation?
Yep. Well, it's really balancing the way I look at it is balancing high tech with high touch. We have to have that high touch. We're losing that every single day. But it's also important, and don't misunderstand me, technology is great. It has helped us communicate much more efficiently, much more conveniently, but we have to keep that high touch in place as well. So how do they go about that? Well, they need to look at their own culture, first of all. What are their employees saying? Is there a disconnect between employees? Do they need to be working on some teamwork? Do they need to get their employees connected with each other? Are they so disconnected that they can't work efficiently and effectively together? So it really, I think it takes looking inward, asking your employees for their feedback, and determining, and then looking at your strategic plan, and looking at where the disconnects are. What are our employees saying? What's our strategic plan? What are our customers saying? Looking at all those, that great feedback, and then looking for the gaps and determining, okay, where do we need to work? What do we need to work on? A lot of times it comes down to, teamwork or employee engagement, customer attraction, retention, and expansion. Companies who want to really attract, retain, and expand relationships, they need to make sure their employees know how to build relationships and establish relationships and retain relationships.
We're talking with Leanne Zelog of Simply Put, LLC. This is the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Casco Bay is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Casco Bay, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascoBay.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
And And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Lee Zelog of Simply Put. And we've been talking about training, we've been talking about organizations that are looking to enhance engagement and drive profit through successful communication, really,
right.
is what
yes,
we're talking
right.
about. So talk to me a little bit about that in terms of what you think are key areas that they need to focus on.
Well, we need to always remember that most businesses are in the human relations business. They're in the customer business. We get so overwhelmed, as I mentioned, with information and technology, but we're still in the customer service business. There's a couple of statistics that I'll just share about how important human relations skills are for your employees, how important good communication and interpersonal skills are for employees in order to drive good business, creating business, attracting business, retaining business. The first statistic is satisfied customers tell 5 people about the good service they receive, where dissatisfied customers tell 10 people about the bad service. So we need to take a look at what sort of service are your employees delivering? Is it good or is it bad? Because people talk a lot more about that bad service than the good service. And think about what is your most important asset in your company. It's probably your employees. So all the more reason that you need to invest in their development, so as I said before, so they can deliver that good service that you are promising through your marketing and hopefully create loyal customers who are going to then refer more business. The difference between satisfied and loyal, satisfied customers, you have the risk of losing them. Loyal customers, you've developed a rich relationship with them. They're going to refer business to you.
Absolutely.
And your employees can help develop those loyal customers.
No, you're absolutely correct. It's, you know, whether it's an internal customer or an external customer, communication
absolutely,
between
right.
anyone in an organization. Mm-hmm. I remember that we were talking about a marketing pamphlet for CMA. And one of the key things that happens, we were trying to figure out the right verbiage. Mm-hmm. And somebody on the team said, "You know, this is an awful lot of words here. We've got a lot on this marketing." And one of my employees keenly looked over and goes, "Dave, yes, isn't the only way to communicate through words, pretty much, if you want them to know?" And there was this pause and look on my face of, duh.
Yeah.
You know, here I am trying to simplify it almost
right.
to the point of like 6 words on the page. And he goes, "And how do you plan to explain it
with,
you know, like going through hoops and doing a juggling act?"
Right,
and I went,
it's
so succinct, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting. Obviously, the written communication, we do have to solely rely on words. Mm-hmm. But when we're one-on-one, and even through email, texting, Facebook, there are other components to our communication, such as body language and tone.
And tone, especially tone.
Yes. But body language, too, is, you know, body language is much more heavily weighted in communication than the words. We think the words we say are so very important, and they are. But our body language and our tone, or our tone, Dave.
Yes, on the radio, words are important.
Right, exactly. And
tone.
And tone is important. So get it right, Dave. No, I'm just kidding. That's my tone coming through. But my point is, tone is so very important. People have to start looking at themselves in a mirror. That's the only way they're going to be able to enhance their skills, change their behavior to make sure it's consistently positive, productive, efficient, and effective. Our tone and our body language are so vitally important.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You're talking about change.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know that you and I have spoken a little bit before the show having to do with the challenges of change in an organization, whether it be from a culture side, whether it be from buy-in. I know you brought some information you wanted to share on change.
Just a couple of quick little things about change. First of all, I don't know too many people who love change. You know, as a human species, we kind of
we shy away.
Thank you, Dave. We shy away from change. We're afraid of change. We don't like change. So if you are investing in trying to change the behavior of employees, understand a couple of things. One, it's an evolution. It's not going to happen overnight. Changing behavior is very difficult, and I'll tell you why. So you listeners out there, I have a couple of fun things you can do right now. And Dave, you can do it along with me.
Okay.
And Deb. Okay, so cross your arms in front of you. You know, cross your chest, just like cross your arms in front of you.
All right, crossed.
Now, whatever arm is on top, reverse it and put the other arm. How does that feel?
Awkward.
Awkward. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Now, clasp, again, audience, you can participate. Clasp your hands in front of you on
a
desk. If
you're driving, don't clasp
your
hands.
Oh, yes, right.
Hands.
Thank you. Yeah, and don't cross your arms. Thank you, Dave.
Just a suggestion.
Yeah,
just,
you can do this
just
later.
Just because it's a radio audience,
yeah. Thank
think
you.
This through.
Yes, thank you.
That is a safety warning from the HR Power Hour.
Thank you very much, Dave. But you can try this at home or in your office. Clasp your hands in front of you on your lap, on a desk. Whatever thumb is on top, reverse it and put the other thumb. How does that feel?
Of course, awkward.
Awkward, funny. The point is, with both of those examples, is the human mind is very, very efficient. Once the human mind picks up on a pattern or a habit, it is very difficult to break that habit, as I just demonstrated with those two. And when you are trying to make a change, something as easy as what we just did, it's going to feel funny. It's going to be difficult. So I caution people and tell them that if you are trying to change a behavior, if I have given you some knowledge, a skill, a concept, a technique that you are going to implement in your life, just know that it's going to feel funny because you are trying to make a change. But you have to keep at it. It's like reprogramming your computer. You have to reprogram your mind because your mind is so efficient. It picks up those habits very, very quickly, very, very easily. So just be aware that change is difficult. And for businesses, if you're trying to change behavior, trying to change culture, it is an evolution and it takes time.
Yeah, I remember from certainly listening and reading some things from Stephen Covey. He talks about it takes, you know, 21 days
right.
to change a habit.
Yes.
And that's what the reprogramming you're really talking right. about.
Exactly.
You know, and that it is a behavioral shift.
Yes, exactly.
In terms of that.
Yeah. And oftentimes with training, I think companies, you know, they bring in trainers and we give them information and leave, and that's the end of it. It has to be an evolution. It has to be tied to your strategic objectives. It has to be tied to whatever your priorities are, and it has to leverage everything else that you have going on in your business. Otherwise, your employees won't really make the connection. Well, why are we doing this? Oh, here we go again. It's the flavor of the month. But if you can tie it with everything that you're doing and leveraging it, and a key piece is holding people accountable. That is so key in driving the culture that you want and the change in the behavior that you want from your employees.
So we're talking about change. You also brought along, I know, some tips on positively influencing employees.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's positively influencing employees, but I like to talk about the fact that the programs that I do and the way that I help businesses is that it not only helps people internally with employees and their customers, but it also, because we're talking about communication, we communicate with everybody, people at home, at work. So I have a couple of really quick tips or one real major tip to give you. When you're communicating, very easily, there's three ways, Dave, that we can leave people when we communicate. The three ways we can leave them in a better place, a worse place, or exactly where they are. Now, I hope I've left you in a better place today. I hope I've left the listeners in a better place. But the tip is, if we can strive, keep in our mind, if we can strive to leave people in a better place, leave everyone you interact with in a better place.
That's a great tip.
What's going to happen is you're not only going to leave them in a better place, you're going to know that you've left them in a better place. What's going to happen is it's going to come back to you.
Absolutely. You'll
and
be in
leave
a better place.
You in a better place.
Absolutely.
Very powerful concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you've given some great information, some great basic information in terms of really communicating better. But, you know, you've got a wild side, I see.
Yes,
here.
Yes, I do.
You have a wild side. And so tell us a little about, you know, your passion mm-hmm. for wildlife conservation.
Yes. Well, thank you. My husband, when I first met my husband, his whole life he was very passionate and very interested in wildlife. Long story short, he grew up and became a wildlife and nature photographer. His passion grew into his business, and he now focuses solely on wildlife and nature photography, although over the years he's done a lot of other photography. We live in Whitefield on 70 acres, and about 8 years ago, he spent a year photo documenting just the wildlife and nature on our 70 acres to show people just how closely we live to wildlife and nature, that oftentimes all we have to do is venture into our own backyards. In Maine, we have this huge natural resource in our backyards full of wonderful nature and wildlife. And through my husband and his interest and passion in nature and wildlife, that helped me to slow my life down and appreciate the natural environment, which really inspires me every single day, helps me to live more simply, not only my business, simply put, but my whole philosophy about life is living a little more simply. So my husband and I both are very much wildlife advocates. We do presentations together about what nature and wildlife can do for your own well-being, but also the well-being of our earth.
And you actually have a book that captures a lot of that photography, I see, called By a Maine River.
Yes, By a Maine River, A Year of Looking Closely. That was the book that came out of my husband's year-long adventure of spending a year photographing nature and wildlife on our 70 acres in Whitefield, Maine.
No, that's great. Well, you know, I got to thank you very much, Leanne, for being on the show today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And once again, all this information and the copy of this show will be on the HR Power Hour website, and you can download it at any time, and we will have her contact information up there, so you don't have to worry about misspelling your name.
Thank you.
So make sure it's up there, and I want to then thank you very much for being on the show.
It was really my pleasure, David. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We will be right back.
Maine DOT has a special announcement for northbound drivers who routinely take I-295's Exit 15 in Yarmouth. Stop taking Exit 15. I repeat, stop taking Exit 15. It's not your exit anymore. It was your exit once, but not now. Forget about northbound Exit 15. Exit 15 is not for you. Actually, Maine DOT is adding a brand new on-ramp there, and to do that safely and quickly, closing Exit 15 is required starting March 12th. So if you're driving northbound on Interstate 295 and headed for Route 1 in Yarmouth, take Exit 10 in Falmouth or Exit 17. Temporary traffic signals will make taking those alternate exits safe and convenient. You can take Exit 15 southbound, but just forget all about Exit 15 northbound, at least until June. Sometime in June, you can take Exit 15 then. Take it all you want. Exit 15 will be yours once again. A message from Maine DOT. There's better road ahead. Drive safely.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're talking today to Mike Miles, and you're from the
City of Portland.
City of Portland, the Director of HR.
Yes, sir.
Wow, that's great. Now, how many employees there at the City of Portland?
About 1,375.
That's great. You guys do a great job. You know, I certainly, our operation is right there in downtown Portland, right next to Monument Square. And, you know, you guys have a lot of area to cover.
Yes, indeed, and I'm very proud of the workforce.
Yes, you should be. Well, we're going to be talking today a little bit about maintaining a non-union status. So let's talk about the credibility statement.
Okay.
How many unions do you deal with in the City of Portland?
Right now it's eight.
Eight unions.
Mm-hmm.
Challenges with that?
It's yes, it is challenging to work with labor unions, to be sure.
And what are some of the biggest challenges that sometimes face for a HR department?
Well, when you're in a unionized environment, the challenges that you face that are unlike being in a non-union environment include basically having to talk about a whole bunch of things you don't have to talk about with employees, such as negotiating wages, negotiating starting times, ending times, terms and conditions of employment, benefits programs, health insurance, work rules. Virtually every element of work life is regulated by a union contract. And, you know, if you have that situation, you can work with it and make it work, as we've done very well with the city of Portland. But I guess my point of view is, as an HR professional of 3.5 decades duration, is it's easier as managers to work with a non-union organization.
Well, I would think certainly if you're thinking about the challenges that are faced, I know certainly at CMA we deal with a number of organizations that have unions. And sometimes, especially when it comes to discipline, or especially when it comes to employees not necessarily living up to their end of the bargain, having to do with work quality.
Certainly.
These are areas that stand out, and this is no secret, stand out as a challenge when you're dealing with a union environment.
No question about that.
What are some of the things that you recommend from the standpoint of how do you keep and maintain a non-union status?
Well, I guess my starting point for this discussion would be in looking at a union website and say, and take a look at why people organize. And let me read from AFSCME's Council 8, which is in Ohio's website. They say, Ohio's public employees, nonprofit employees, and other workers who provide public services are looking for fairness on the job. They want reasonable, consistent, and fairly enforced policies and a voice in making those policies. They want to earn good wages, have affordable quality health care benefits, and a secure retirement. That statement covers most of the ground. And fundamentally, from my experience, it's about fairness. It's about being respected and feeling respected.
Do you think that, and I kind of know the answer, but I'll see your perspective, and maybe you not have the same perspective as I, that has to do with who the supervisors are, who the management is, how they treat the employees?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I know from doing attitude surveys that there's two questions that I pay more attention to than any other questions on an attitude survey. And the first one is, do you like your supervisor? Do you get along with your supervisor? And the other is, do you feel respected? And if either of those two questions is answered in the negative, most everything else is going to be negative. And if those two answers are positive, the rest of the answers are likely going to be positive. Those are critical issues. How a supervisor treats employees with respect and dignity and in an interactive fashion rather than in a dictatorial fashion. And treats them with a kind of respect and courtesy that you would expect of a decent human being.
You know, sometimes employers or supervisors or management have never really been trained on how to be supervisors. And they think it's this big, long, tough process to be trained in those areas. And while there are development, no question, there are some basic fundamentals, aren't there, in terms of just dealing with employees in general.
Oh, absolutely. Some of those that would occur to me, and I would welcome you to fill in, would be having people knowing what the rules are. And that's the starting point. If there are unwritten rules and unwritten expectations, how can people possibly know what they are? How can people abide by them? How can people avoid violating them? That's the first thing. Second,
well, and with that, I'll just add that's part of, if you want to call it, an employee handbook.
Yes.
You know, there are cultures that develop within an organization, and certainly the longer an organization has for its history, there are, I call, the unwritten, behind-the-scene rules, things you just don't do, things you must do, things you should do, things that will, you know, make the supervisor not happy, you know. Those are the things that necessarily aren't written down. But if you can minimize those, you really do improve the environment.
And I think that's a critical one. And the second one is, giving people reasonable expectations about what the work is to be done, and enforcing those expectations thoughtfully, appropriately, even-handedly. The cry of unfairness is the one that that resonates with people who are organizing unions. The bad supervisor is the most frequently cited reason for union organizations starting.
And that talks about communication.
Absolutely.
You know, I have certainly seen, I'm sure you have, supervisors who are actually very good. Mm-hmm. And they want to be fair, they want to do the right thing, but they struggle in their ability to communicate well mm-hmm. with employees. Either they're maybe more introverted, or they don't necessarily use body language or facial expressions that match the words that come out of their mouths. And that's where some of the trouble really does start.
And, you know, Dave, I think one of the other key areas that's linked to that is people don't innately have good conflict resolution skills. You have to be taught them. You have to learn them. You have to practice them. And a lot of people, probably most people, are afraid of conflict. They back away from it. And when you're dealing with employees, and if you have a problem with an employee and you're not addressing it appropriately, and you're letting it build up and build up and build up and build up, and then all of a sudden you're loading down on them, it's a problem.
Well, you know, we're talking about communication, but there's also the problem of someone taking it personally.
Yes.
You know, the emotion side. Mm-hmm. They disrespected me. They don't understand my authority. They didn't do what I told them to do. They're challenging my authority. And sometimes supervisors, at least from what I've seen, have to kind of like almost bite their tongue a little and not take it personal. This is business.
Oh, absolutely. And as a supervisor, you're held to a higher standard than the non-supervisory employees about dealing with conflict situations and taking it personally. There's a certain level of you got to put up with stuff that might be a little uncomfortable as a supervisor. Listening more, for example, and holding your tongue, as you're saying.
Yeah, well, it's flexing, right? To mm-hmm. flexing to the emotion and to the challenge that's in front of you. Also realizing, I tell supervisors all the time, you're on stage. You know, you're being watched in everything you do. So that moment you think that you can get away with something, somebody is looking somewhere from some angle, some direction, and will catch you doing the thing that you mm-hmm. said you should not do. Mm-hmm. So just don't do it.
And there's a hundred different ways of being respectful on the job. Asking questions of people, inviting their expertise, being interactive as opposed to directorial. Is one way of engaging people, and the engagement process is key to a good supervisory employee working relationship.
No, those are all key areas. You know, when at the bottom line, at the end of the day, pay is an issue, but it's never the first issue. You know, when you're talking about paying a fair wage, as long as you're within the ball game, I find that pay for most surveys, mm-hmm. and you can go nationwide, you can go regionally, it doesn't really mm-hmm. matter. Pay is almost like number 8 or 9 on yeah. the list. It's not necessarily about being the highest paid, but it's being respected for what you're getting paid for.
And if you're in a position in the market where you can't offer the highest wages in the market, you can still be competitive because you're a good place to work, because you treat people well, because you use the wages that you offer sensitively, thoughtfully, and fairly. And you you bring other non-wage things into the equation. Flexibility, respect, decency, job satisfaction.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, and that certainly you can make up for those. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Mike Miles, the Director of Human Resources for the City of Portland, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Mike Miles today, who's the Director of Human Resources for the City of Portland. And our topic is maintaining non-union status. Mike, again, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
All right, so, you know, we've been talking about the reasons why supervisors sometimes bring on unions themselves by not really paying attention to what the employees need, or organizations not putting the employees first. Let's talk a little bit about, for a second here, on what you think is the training that can be provided to supervisors to help prevent this.
Well, I think one of the very first things we need to train supervisors in is, what are the organization's policies? You know, you need, in a non-union organization, to have a disciplinary policy that is sensible and thoughtful and fair. You need to have work rules that are well known and that are well articulated. And if the supervisors don't know them, they can't enforce them and they can't communicate them. So that's the first thing.
Well, you know, just to interject a second, yeah. It's interesting. We do HR audits quite mm-hmm. a bit, and we do interview supervisors. And I am constantly amazed by what they don't know. And it's not because they don't want to know. It's yeah. because they're worried about their day-to-day job,
sure.
and they forget all the hundreds, sometimes mm-hmm. many hundreds of rules that are out there. So you're absolutely right. Reminding them of it and refreshing courses is critical.
A second thing that the supervisors need to know is conflict resolution. You can't just launch into conflict without some skill building. And I think that is something that'll get supervisors out of a lot of problems, probably more than anything else that we can do in terms of training. A third thing that I think is useful to train supervisors is how to deal with employees as employees who have whole lives. So they bring themselves to work, all of themselves to work. And if they're going to be fully present in the workplace, the supervisor's got to be able to engage them fully. And a fourth
thing... Well, because you don't know what's going on at home, right?
Exactly.
You don't
exactly.
know. That's true. And sometimes it's not that they're not doing a good job because they don't want to. There are factors
Certainly.
That are out there.
And one example of that, and I cite this in my new employee orientation, is domestic violence is a problem in the culture. A certain percentage of people who come to work are going to be experiencing that. It would be useful for a supervisor to know what the signals for that are and what the resources for that might be. It's useful as well to know, for example, about drug and alcohol policy and substance abuse policy. And how do you engage with people who have those sorts of struggles in their lives and stay appropriate on the job? And then the final sort of catch-all category of supervisory training that I think is important is in how to interview and how to hire people in ways that go beyond the gut. and move into more analytical ways, listening skills, supervisory skills. All of that, none of this stuff is innate. All of this stuff is learned, and it's possible to become a really good supervisor. It's hard to become a really good supervisor without knowing this stuff.
No, and it's not taught in schools.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. It is learned, and I think that it is critical that an organization or company provide that type of training for it. You know, we were talking during the break about, you said you had an epiphany about a story that you have that really brought it home. So please share with the audience.
Sure. Before I worked for the city of Portland, I worked with a social services agency that's called Youth Alternatives, which became Youth Alternatives Ingraham, which is now the Opportunity Alliance. And the ethic of the place is one of open communication, open door, open financials. The openness of the organization was astounding to me, and it came to a point of insight for me when we had an all agency day, 400 people in a room. The top management team sat in chairs in front of the audience. Somebody passed a hat, and everybody was given slips of paper and the opportunity to put the right questions. They put into the hat and were read anonymously. An organization that was so confident in its openness and its receptivity to employees that it permitted anonymous questions to be asked in a large public forum, I thought that was probably the best example ever of an open and respectful organization that dared to listen even to with the possibility of being embarrassed.
Well, you know, that doesn't happen a lot. I'll tell you, in the business world, it certainly doesn't. And, you know, if they're willing to communicate even publicly about their challenges and then address them, you're right, that is a key takeaway for some organization to be able to do that. You know, one of the things that I know you were talking to me about before we got to the show was about how to treat people with respect. We talked about it during the first segment. And, you know, you kind of have some tips, if you want to call it, that kind of fall into the example you just provided, but also some tips. So can you share them?
I would be happy to. The thoughts I have about that are, first of all, involve employees in decision-making about the work that they do and even about the direction of the organization. People on the front lines know things that we don't, as managers, always know. Second, you got to pay people fairly. The pay rules ought to be explicit. People ought to be confident they know how things work, even if they may not know the particulars of what each individual is earning. People generally find out. So I operate with the assumption that people will know and that they'll be upset if I do something that's not appropriate. So don't do things that are inappropriate. Third, make your policies clear, explicit, and available. Fourth, to the extent that it's possible, provide promotional mobility for employees. If they got someplace to go within the organization, that's certainly a positive. Developing dispute resolution mechanisms that work. Grievance processes. You want to be able to have any problems that you have resolved at the lowest possible level of visibility and within the company if you can. And so providing those dispute resolution mechanisms may be inconvenient for you as a manager and as a business owner, but it's really important to do. Addressing conflict directly and immediately. Letting stuff fester is one of the biggest problems in any organization. And that requires a bit of courage, but it requires probably more training and the courage to just address it. Treating people with respect involves, as I was saying about Youth Alternatives, open books, open doors, open communication, and thanking people on a regular basis, appreciating people sincerely and with particular detailed appreciations of what they do and how they do and how that affects you. And finally, confidential attitude surveys are really, really useful. You really don't know what your people think about you on the full range of issues unless you ask them. And you won't know what they really think unless you ask them confidentially. You'll get a load of information. And finally, if you do an attitude survey, you got to tell people what you found. and what you're going to do about it. Because if you can't be in a position of raising expectations and then doing nothing and letting them fall, because people will never respond again.
Well, it's credibility.
Yeah,
credibility
absolutely.
To yourself, credibility yep. to the organization.
And you'll get heaps of credit for having asked the question.
So if all of this is done correctly and all of this is done well, you will maintain non-union status?
That's most of the time the outcome.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think, look, at the end of the day, it's not against unions.
Mm-hmm.
It's about maintaining an environment where people feel valued.
Absolutely.
And don't feel that they have to collectively join something mm-hmm. against the organization to advocate for them. Mm-hmm. That's really what you're right. It's mm-hmm. really what it's all about. You know, it's funny. I have heard that you personally have a huge CD and record collection. Is that correct?
Yes, actually it is. I've probably seen 1,000 concerts, literally 1,000 concerts in my life. And I've skinnied my record collection down from about 15,000 down to only 3,000. And I'm a massive consumer of music. It feeds my soul, and it's great.
Well, tell me about, you know, since we have another minute here, mm-hmm. what's one of the more famous records you have, maybe?
Well, probably my most collectible record might be a different answer to the question you asked, but I have the Beatles White Album on white vinyl.
Wow.
From France. And it's, I don't know why that's such a prized possession, but I really like it.
No, I'm sure it's rare. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many they made?
It was a couple thousand.
Wow.
So it's probably pretty collectible, but you know, I wouldn't pass it up for money. I just like owning it.
No, I understand. Well, Mike, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. I think you provided some great, simple, but easy to follow steps to maintaining a non-union status. I appreciate all the work you do for the city of Portland and appreciate you being on the show today.
Thanks so much. It's my pleasure.
And now your HR tip of the week. Are you getting ready to interview? There are three key things you must do whenever you're getting ready to answer any interview question. First, please answer the question. Yes, you must make sure you take the time to listen carefully and not assume that the person is going to ask the question the way you think it will be asked. Listen carefully and completely answer the question. Second, if you can provide an example, maybe a how-to of how you did your answer to that question, that provides context for the interviewer, and they'll be able to listen to how you did the process and really be able to relate to how you can do it for them. Third and finally, and probably most importantly, provide a result. A result is a way to show that you're different from everybody else that is interviewing for this position. Because you provided a result, saving money, streamlining a process, and maybe even providing an example to the amount of money saved or the amount of savings in quality or downtime, that really provides the difference for you in making an impact to that employer and that interviewer. So take those three steps and you will succeed. That is your HR tip of the week.
Next week on the HR Power Hour is Peter Burke, president of Best Companies Group. He's going to be talking about what else the best places to work.
Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.